Please help me welcome our speaker tonight. Her name is Amy. She's from Milltown, New Jersey.
Hi. Amy, alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 27th of 2004, and it's an honor to be asked to speak anywhere. I absolutely love this program. I always used to hate people who got up to the podium and they're like, oh, life beyond your wildest dreams. But honestly, I never had this dream, but it's pretty cool, the life that I get to live. And it's, you know, almost got a little teary-eyed at those steps, because it's all because of those steps. And if you really read them, they look like they wouldn't do anything. They're not going to affect a change. And somehow it just changes everything. So I'm going to start at the beginning. Before I ever started drinking, I was a pain in the butt. I don't know what was wrong with me. You'll hear some speakers, they'll talk about how, oh, I could be called an alcoholic before I ever picked up the drink. I don't know if that's the case. I just know I was a pain. I was, from the time I was 5 years old, I had this need to be right. And if you didn't agree with me, I was going to tell you so and convince you so. That just got worse as the years went on. I just don't know what it was. But even I remember, like, I drew simple things. I drew a letter E backwards. And my mom tried to tell me it was backwards, and she brought out all these different books, even a dictionary. And I said, well, you're wrong. You're all wrong. The whole world's wrong. You know, and that's pretty much a good example of the kind of person that I started growing up to be. And, you know, the big book talks about people like myself. You know, everywhere I went, I was constantly just bumping heads with people. And I started to suspect that maybe it was me, because it couldn't be possible that the whole world was that horrible. But my mom, God bless her, well-meaning in every way, you know, she told me, no, it's them. You know, and I was given everything in the world to succeed. I was put in born-again Christian school, born-again Christian church, private school. And normal people, not to say that, you know, Christianity is the way, but like a normal person would have grown up in that sort of environment and succeeded. You know, I was told things like, you get good grades, you can be anything you want to be, you know, what do you want to be? And I was like, oh, I'm going to be a pediatrician, you know, and I did everything I could to get good grades and, all that stuff. So I started off on the right path. But for some reason, getting all those good grades, it didn't help me socially, you know, and no matter how many trophies that I got, I was still scared. You know, I was scared to talk to the little boys. I was scared to talk to the little girls, and I got made fun of and told things like, you know, you'd be cute if you didn't have glasses. And, you know, I ended up going to public school, and I'm really glad that I found alcohol, because socially, I was pretty upset. Like I said, I got made fun of, and I adored the fact that alcohol made it okay. You know, I no longer cared what you guys thought about me. I no longer cared about getting good grades. I no longer cared about going to school. And, you know, I found that it was just what I needed to succeed in life, where it counted. You know, and I started changing my goals. You know, I realized that, you know, I don't want to grow up and have a family because I don't want to grow up and get married because my parents argue. I don't want to have a family because, you know, me and my brother argue. You know, I don't want to have a 9-to-5 job because then you have to go to work. You know, so I started not to want these things. And I started to find that I loved drinking so much. It was so much fun that is the purpose of life, to have fun, right? Seize the day. And I did have a lot of other substances with that as well, but, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, alcohol was always there, and, you know, I just did whatever was in front of me, because, you know, I had that hole in the soul, and anything that would take away that feeling of being lonely, of being empty, of missing, just missing something, you know, worked for me. But alcohol was always there. And I quickly, alcohol wasn't really much of a problem when I was in high school. It was more those other things. But by the end of high school, I wasn't doing very well. I ended up, my parents kind of, well, long story short, I ended up in school down in Florida. I grew up in New Jersey. I went down there because I thought, you know, surely I won't get in trouble down there. And they told me I had to pay for my own school because I failed out of the first college. And so I was down there, went to school, went to 2 years of school, started getting the good grades again. If you have any, if you're wondering if your brains come back, they do come back if you use them again. And so I was like, okay, maybe I should do this life stuff. Maybe I'll go to more school. I did pretty well with this. And what ended up happening was I wasn't doing any drinking or those other things while I was down there. And I started getting that restlessness, that irritability, that discontent that the Big Book talks about. And without any ease and comfort, you know, I have a tendency to think that it's the whole world around me. And so I thought it was the state of Florida. I thought it was the bugs. I thought it was the humidity. And I thought that I need to get back to New Jersey. That's my problem. And so I got back to New Jersey, and, you know, I had the career in place. I had a huge apartment. My car was paid off. They gave me huge credit cards, and something was missing. And I knew it wasn't the relationship, didn't want that. And I knew it wasn't the kids, didn't want that either. But there was just something missing, you know. And I thank God that there's places that serve people underage. And I remember thinking that it's not going to be like it was when I was in high school, you know, and I was 20 years old, and, you know, I'm thinking I'm an adult now. It'll be different. And I was absolutely right. You know, it was different. I could drink a lot more than I could when I was a teenager. And I started to get more of that off to the races thing where because I could afford more alcohol, because I had more friends that could buy it for me, and now I had a place where I could drink, you know, in a bar, you know. And so I found that I needed other things to control and enjoy my drinking. You know, I'm a firm believer that anything that I loved doing while I was sober was more fun while I was drinking, and I love driving to this day. So I'm an avid drunk driver. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying I loved it. And it's very hard to do that while drinking, and so I found different substances allowed me to control and enjoy my drinking. But now I'm not getting any sleep before work. I'm showing up hungover at work. So I found another substance, got rid of my drinking problem altogether. And I really thought that, you know, well, my grandparents aren't alcoholics. I'm going to do this substance the way they drank, and it'll be okay. And I was going to work. I was paying my bills. You know, I was functioning, so I thought this is all right. And after a while, I started getting arrested, and people are saying stuff like, hey, Amy, that's your problem. Just stick to drinking. Just stick to drinking. Just stick to drinking. I'm like, I don't even like drinking. So I do what I do. And when I get in trouble, I move down to Florida again. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to stay away from all those other substances. That's my problem, you know. And I'm thinking that I'm really intelligent and that, you know, self-knowledge will fix it. There's this guy in the Big Book called Fred. I love Fred. And he learns all about it. He's like, oh, you know, you guys are weak. I'm different. And that's what I thought. I'm like, you know, you guys who go to meetings, you're weak. It's like a cult anyway. Why anybody would get sober together in a room is bizarre. And so I'm like, well, I'm really intelligent. I'm going to write a book and teach all you people how to do it. And that worked out pretty good for the greater part of a year. But once again, I'm down in Florida, and there's this like 3-month honeymoon period where like it seems that geographical cure, I can move to a new place, and for about 3 months, everything's wonderful. Like, you ever seen those people fresh out of detox? Oh my God, it's great. Sobriety's great. And I'm like, you wait. And, that 3-month period, I'm a personal believer, you know, if you get into that the steps, you know, that, you know, pink cloud doesn't have to pop, you know, and you land abruptly on your face. But that's just my opinion. But, you know, that 3 month period was there, and everything was peachy, and then all of a sudden it's gone again. And once again, I'm like, I'm in Florida. It's hot. I'm like, hey, there's bugs. People don't know how to drive. They don't know how to dress. So once again, I think it's everybody around me. So I moved back up to New Jersey, and I thought one of the things when I'm trying to figure out, like, how to, you know, stay sober and, you know, write a book and teach everybody how to do it was I need to live with friends of the family, because loneliness, that's why, you know, I drank and did all those other things. And so if I live with friends of the family, I'll be absolutely okay. And they say stuff like, Amy, you know, those other substances are your problem. Just stick to drinking. And I'm like, yeah, I don't even like drinking. You know, and I hung out with them for a good amount of time, you know, and it wasn't a problem. They always drank around me. I just, you know, I had fun with them. And, you know, just like when I was 20 years old and my mind just changed and it told me, you know what, it's going to be different this time. This time my mind, it wasn't even that tricky. This time my mom was like, you know what, it's a barbecue. It's sacrilegious not to drink a beer at a barbecue. And it told me, too, is like, you know, beer is not even alcohol. It's like food. So I just had one beer, you know, I didn't open it and all of a sudden like I was beating somebody up, you know. I remember the sun was setting, it was beautiful, I had a good time. Next night I didn't even want to drink. I thought, wow, I've really been overthinking this drinking thing, it's not so bad. You know, third night, once again, one beer, and I'm all class, so I'm holding the can, and I'm like sipping it, you know, real slow, one beer, you know, and it's absolutely fine. But by the end of the week, I was off to the races. And, you know, I said, as long as I don't do any substances, I'll be okay. And then somebody offered me some substances. And I'm like, well, I'll just stick to, like, I won't do the really bad ones. You know, I'll just do the socially acceptable ones, which now I realize that in normal social circles, there's no drugs that are acceptable. And, So I had these ideas, you know, and the drinking started to get real bad to the point where, you know, we all know the story. I mean, it's got in the book, you know, you try vodka and you wake up with wet pants. So you decided to go to wine and then you wake up with the shakes. So I'm going to start adding cranberry to my vodka, you know, different ways to control and enjoy my drinking. We've all been through it, you know, put different names in there, however, you know, and I tried different ways. I even tried, all right, well, if I alternate with this substance this week, I won't get so bad with the alcohol. And I can tell you that I ended up getting kicked out of the one place, moved to another place. It was this party house. Things got real bad real fast, and I'm really grateful for that. That is part of the reason I'm still here. If things didn't get bad, I don't think I'd be half as willing to do all the things that I do for my sobriety. So it got really bad really fast. I was living in a party house down in the basement. I can tell you at nighttime that if I heard footsteps, you know, I didn't know if those footsteps were going to come into my bed. You know, and I didn't know if I was going to get raped that night. And I can tell you that I didn't care, because at least I didn't have to be alone that night. And I can tell you that towards the end of my drinking and all those other things, the drinking got real bad real fast. I was about a quarter mile from a liquor store, and I thought that, you know, I was okay if I only drank like half of a gallon, you know. And I can tell you also that, you know, somewhere along the way, it stopped shutting my mind off. And I remember thinking that, you know, there's got to be a better way. You know, it's weird. It's like no matter how far down, and I've heard it, you know, 1,000 times, but no matter how far down we get, you know, there's this, like it says in the book, you know, we know there's a better way. We know it deep down. And I knew it, and I just didn't know how to get there. And I remember thinking that there's no help available. And so I started cutting myself on a regular basis. Every night, that was my ritual. I'd go down to the basement, and I'd cry, and I'd cut myself. And I tried committing suicide. Didn't really work out too well. I remember one of the nights that I was planning my suicide. I never got to it. I was afraid, deeply afraid that I would do it and someone would find me. And that was mortifying to me, to not be able to do that completely. So I never really got to that. I did try one night, and I got really cold. I was, like, crying. I lost my last bit of money, and I'm very pitiful, you know, crying early spring in New Jersey. And, you know, I hate being cold, so I started getting really cold. And I'm like, oh, maybe it's not such a good day to die. So I get inside, and I'm, like, patching myself up. And, you know, my friend's little sister walks in, and she calls for help, this guy for help, and he comes over. And for the first time in my life, you know, it wasn't a boyfriend thing. It wasn't, you know, any other thing besides another human being thing. And he said, I know how you feel, and don't worry, we're going to figure this thing out together. You know, and for the first time in my life, you know, I felt, like, not so alone. And what ended up happening was everything in his life got to be perfect, like perfect. He had a 30th birthday party, and I thought it was a little weird that he was missing all night. And the next day I get the call. They're like, you know, Dave's dead. He killed himself. And I remember that I lost it, and I started drinking away that, you know, if you've been there, you understand, you know, out of desperation. After that, I just wanted to disappear so bad. And even so, you know, I didn't know what to do. I just didn't want to exist. And luckily for me, God intervened in the form of bounty hunters. And they were really, really nice. They gave me a day to fix it. I couldn't fix it. They were a little upset with me. So I figured, okay, I'll go to jail, get everybody off my back, go right back to it. I know, you know, I helped my friend Jess do that for years. Probation didn't stop anybody in the past. It's not going to stop me. And so I went to jail. I thought it was going to be scary, like on TV, you know, people were going to, you know, beat me and call me their girlfriend. But it's not like that. They're people just like me, except without heels. And I would say, I normally say without makeup, but we figured out how to make makeup in there. We had a lot of time on our hands. And so I got in there, and, you know, a lot of people say, you know, jails, rehabs, institutions. I'm like, you know, I get to a bottom, and I take the dirt and rocks, and I make a pillow. I get comfortable. And I made myself comfortable. I learned how to place beads. I got a couple of businesses. This doesn't make me tough. This just makes me adaptable. I don't know. But so I get there, and I'm, like, really comfortable, and this scared the crap out of me because I was like, I had one of those moments where it's like, okay, you're in jail and you're comfortable and you're okay with the fact that this is going to be your life in and out of jail for the rest of your life and you're completely all right with it. Another moment of clarity I had was this woman was in there. She was 60 years old, and she looked like she was 90, and she was so uncomfortable, and everybody treated her like crap. And I didn't want that for myself. And so I started talking to my roommate, and she's like, listen, if you want to do something differently, talk to the judge. So I wrote a letter to the judge. I'm like, listen, I can stay sober for Thanksgiving, Christmas, but not New Year's. That's crazy. And so I thought he was just going to keep me in jail until after New Year's and send me on my merry way, but he had other ideas. He decides that I need rehab. So I'm like, all right, you know. But I can tell you that I did everything I could to not be sober while I was waiting for that bed in rehab. But the day that I went into rehab, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. I'm going to try this. So I did what the rehab told me to do, and I learned everything. And if you've ever been in rehab, there's Little Miss Rehab. She's like, I know what to do. That was me, you know, and the one you want to strangle because you're like, you're not going to make it, you know. And I was too smart for my own good, and I talked down to people. I was condescending. I was dismissive. And I was doing my best, you know. And after I was there for probably 6 months, I got taken a group. It's called Conflict Resolution. And even though everything on the outside looked perfect, these women took me to group and told me what a horrible person I was, and I wanted to die. You know, I thought that if this is the person that I am sober, I don't want to live. You're telling me I can't drink, I can't do anything else, and, you know, and people hate me when I'm sober. I don't want to live, you know. And I thought that just because I stopped drinking that I'm this marvelous, wonderful person. You know, pull out the halo. Here I am. And that's not it. You know, what happens is I stop drinking and I'm manipulative. I play games. Even when I'm doing something nice, I'm keeping track. And trust me, later, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to bring it up and you're going to be sorry, you know? So I was under this delusion that it was different. And these women, 15 women, told me the same thing, a consistent message that I was a horrible person. And I'm putting it lightly, but I'm so grateful that they did, because I ended up going to a psych ward. I love psych wards. I've heard this before, but I love it. Like, when that door shuts, I'm like, I remember slouching down in the chair like, oh, I am safe from me. This is great. My rehab went on a trip to Island Beach State Park, and they're like, you want to come with us? I'm like, no, I'll stay here. Thanks. But it was cool that I went there, because what ended up happening, I'd been going to a lot of meetings, and I'd been hearing people, and I didn't get it. You know, I was trying to figure it out, and, like, I see these people. I'm like, okay, I think I got it. Like, when you're new, you talk about your problems, and you're able to stay sober for that day. And then when you have time, then you talk about all the things that you have. Okay, I get it, you know? And that was the message in my particular area, or at least the meetings that I was going to. And this guy who brought a meeting in was a little bit different. And I remember while I was in rehab, one of the ladies brought a meeting in, and she was one of those people whose biggest day. And she's got the shells in her hair and the flowy dress, and she walks in like, look at me, I'm sober, you know? And, like, I was not impressed. And so me being the pain in the butt, I raise my hands and I'm like, you know, what do you do when you're sober and you don't love yourself? And she couldn't answer me. You know, and I got in trouble at my rehab for disrespecting the AA people. But I'm glad that I asked that. You know, I think that's a reasonable question. So thank God that I went to this psych ward, because the guy who brought the meeting in, he was different. You know, he had a sparkle in his eyes. He was missing all his front teeth. His left arm was limp. He spoke with a lisp, but he just glowed. And he talked about loving himself. And I always say that, you know, whatever you seek in your heart, like, God has a way of just putting it in front of you. And I just started crying. I was like, how do you do that? And I remember everything that he said, but he said something about, you know, the steps. And I'd like to tell you, I got back to my rehab and I was like, oh, sponsor steps. But no, because you know how we are. We get a little bit better and we got it figured out. So I got back to my rehab and I still thought I could figure it out. And I tried everything to be okay. Everything. I even tried joining a Baptist choir. I don't know why I thought joining a Baptist choir would make me feel comfortable in my skin. But I tried it and it was awful. But I think I'd like it now, because I'm not, like, whatever. But so it was like, I cried to get out of that. Like, he didn't let anybody out, but I was like, I can't handle this. So that's how I was. And right about that time, people started calling me this nickname, but they were all too scared to tell me. And to give you a picture of the place that I went to rehab, it's in this ghetto in New Jersey, and mostly prison people get sent there. So these big prison people, they're all too scared to tell me my nickname. They didn't tell me until after I'd been through the, I was up to the ninth step making some amends. But they started calling me Angry Amy. Nobody would tell me. And so what happened was, every time life would happen, from going to the meetings, I thought that if I talk about my problems, then I'm going to be okay. And so I talk about my problems, and they're like, oh, God, Amy's spazzing out again. I'm like, what do you mean I'm spazzing out? But yeah, you know. And so I talked to my therapist, and she's like, listen, Amy, Normally, it helps people to talk about their problems, but it gets you a little bit more upset. So I'm going to ask you, don't talk about your problems. I'm like, Roy, you know, I thought that that was how you stay sober. You get this stuff out, you know. And I remember being slumped down in a chair. I'm in one of my groups in my halfway house, and I'm like, maybe it's in those steps, you know. And right about that time, I was going out with this guy, and he was going to this group. They started bringing a meeting into our rehab. I hated them. You know, when I'm miserable, I hate happy people. Ugh. And they're like, happy. I'm like, oh, God, shut up. You know, and I took bets on them. I'd sit in the back. And actually, one of the people, I'm still friends with him to this day, and he tells me that I looked evil when they walked in there. And I'd sit in the back looking all evil, taking bets on when they were going to relapse. And I remember, like, the boyfriend at that time, he started going to that group. And, you know, he started going through the steps. And I have no particular opinion on fast or slow. I think consecutive is the deal that works best from what I've seen. Not rushing, not taking your time, just want to, you know, consecutive. It's reasonable. And they started talking about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, oh, my God, like, who cares about the history? And they were different. And this guy, he started going through the steps. And I'm telling him the whole time, I'm like, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You know, and I had a sponsor. At that time, I had more time than he did, about maybe a half year, a year, whatever. I thought it was, like, way older. Now, looking back, like, that's really not anything much, but whatever. And I thought, you know, I know better. I'm sober longer, and you're wrong, and you just watch. And I had a sponsor, and I'm like, my sponsor says we're going to get to know each other before we get into those steps, and that's how it should be done, and it's a step a year. And so that was the trend in the particular meetings that I was going to. And what ended up happening is I would get on the phone. I'd call this lady whenever I wanted to. I'd get on the phone, and I'd tell her about all the things that I learned in rehab. And she'd tell me things like, you're like a beautiful blooming butterfly. You have so much potential. You're just such a beautiful woman. And I remember thinking that that's nice for you, but you just don't get it. If you've seen the things that I've seen, if you've done the things that I've done, you wouldn't be saying that. You know, and I remember getting off the phone with her and just crying in the fetal position because I just couldn't handle this thing, life. And everybody seemed to have an easier time. And so I saw that guy go through the steps in the course of a month. And that's just how he did it. I'm not, you know, promoting it or knocking it, just his experience. And he went through those steps, and he started having an easier time at life. And I was jealous. You know, I'll be damned if somebody else is going to feel better than me. So I was going to another 12-step. I didn't really think I was an alcoholic, but I wanted to feel better. So I started going to this meeting, and every week they had a consistent message of people being happy and sober. And every week they had a consistent message with, you know, going through the steps as they're laid out in the big book, and helping, using their experience to help others. And, and how somehow life just gets beautiful and much easier that way. And that wasn't my experience so far, and so I was willing to try it. I got a sponsor in that group, and I thought that she'd be easy because she wore dresses. And at that time, I was a tough girl from, you know, Newark, complete with Hoochie Mama earrings and the attitude to boot. And, she ended up being kind of mean, but it was perfect for me because I was angry Amy. So she'd tell me things like, you got to call me every day. And I remember thinking, you know, I didn't even call my boyfriend every day, and I got to call you a woman. But she didn't really seem to care what I thought. So I missed, like, one day, and I remember trying to, like, smooth it over with her, and she's like, it's your sobriety. I was like, oh, my God. the nerve. But honestly, and she'd tell me things like, I'd rather step on your toes than walk on your grave. And it was perfect because she put it in my hands. And what ended up happening was I started going through the steps, and I started to see that these steps were doing over a period of time what alcohol and those other substances had done instantly. And, like, I could understand why I couldn't do the stuff that's illegal, but I couldn't understand why I couldn't drink. Like I said, I didn't even think I was an alcoholic. And we really took a look at my drinking, and the longer, it's amazing that after I, I'd been through probably the first five steps, I was pushed in the direction of helping others, and I didn't really like people. I hated them, in fact. Like, oh. Like, you wanted to hug me? Go away, you know? Some people, they go through or they come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're like, I felt the love, and I let them love me until I could love myself. I'm like, shut up. And that's just my experience. But I didn't have that experience. I hated people. I hated myself. I hated women. I hated men. I couldn't be touched. And that was just my experience. And I found that... you know, it was hard to start helping people, but the more I started helping others, the more my heart just started opening up, the more I started becoming human. I've had a lot of different experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you there's none more rewarding than sponsoring another woman. In the beginning, I wasn't very nice, but the people who wanted to be sober, they got a good sponsor. But I can tell you, you know, I still got to stay sober through it. Most of the women, I'm still friends with them to this day. It's fabulous. But I wasn't very nice, you know, and I thought that, I thought that all I needed to do to stay in these rooms and to stay happy was to sponsor others, and that if I sponsor others, I'm doing the steps myself, not realizing I need to do 10, 11, and 12. I think later I read in the 12 and 12 it talks about two-stepping. You know, I go through the steps, and I got that step one because I'm going to meetings, I'm speaking at meetings, I got commitments, I'm going to detoxes, and I'm sponsoring others, but I'm not doing anything in between. You know, I'm not doing that I'm not constantly taking a look at myself. I might every now and again if I'm at a diner, but every now and again... every now and again wasn't enough, and what ended up happening is that... I'm sitting in a room, and I got all these girls that I'm sponsoring. You know, I got the whole front row filled. And I know in my heart I'm doing more AA than any of these people in this meeting. And yet they're more peaceful than I am. And I didn't get it. You know, when I started to fall back asleep in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you've ever had that happen, it's the worst thing in the whole entire world, because I just didn't get it. You know, and I didn't know what I was doing wrong. And I tell my sponsor, and my sponsor would be like, you're not doing enough AA. You need to help more people. And I'm helping more people. And I'm doing more AA. And I'm doing like 3, 4, whatever, however many meetings in a day, speaking at however many meetings. And nothing's working. I'm okay as long as I have a new girl on my face. But the second she's gone, I am restless. I am irritable. And I'm discontent. And I just don't get it. You know, when I do an inventory and it's not enough, you know, and what ended up happening is I couldn't take it. I was so uncomfortable in my skin, and I put the blame on my sponsor. I put the blame on my boyfriend. I put the blame on everyone else. And I ended up getting fired by that sponsor, which is the best thing in the whole entire world, because you'll always hear from the podium that whatever sponsor we have, they do the best that they know how, but sometimes that's not enough. You know, and what ended up happening is I got fired by that sponsor, and I got a new sponsor, and that sponsor, every time I called her, she told me to pray. I remember thinking, this woman doesn't know anything, does she? And you know, I did it, but I'm like, you know, I had one of those micromanaging sponsors before, which is good in the beginning. But, like, after a while, you know, I got dependent on the sponsor. You know, and that's just, for me, it didn't work. Some people it works fabulously. Not me. And so I ended up with her, and she's not telling me anything. And she, yeah, go pray about it, go pray about it. And I started really praying about it, and what ended up happening is I started seeing the power of God. You know, I started seeing the power of prayer. And I started seeing there's a lot more to be said about inaction in the moment of, you know, let's say I'm in the middle of a fight. Instead of me doing something about it, not doing something about it and praying about it. And I started seeing that when I don't try to run the show right there, you know, God takes care of me in a way that, you know, maybe the circumstances aren't turning out fine, but I just pray and I see that around the corner, I get something even better, you know, and I just have to sometimes sit quietly, relax, and pray. And, you know, I started growing in a way with God that I never experienced before. And she told me, you know, she took me back through the steps, and she told me things like I have to live in 10, 11, and 12. And she taught me about the fact that, you know, I had to do meditation, and she told me that I was really sick, so I got to do it twice a day. And what I started to see with that, and I'm not a guru or anything, you know, I have some, you know, I read the stuff out of the book, and I also do some guided meditations. Most of them annoy me, but I found two that I like. And I found that the only reason I do it, not because I'm a good AA, but because it lengthens my fuse and it takes me a lot longer to get upset. I do it every day because I just hate being angry, you know, and I love the fact that my fuse gets longer. That is the best thing in the whole entire world. It's funny, since I started doing that on a regular basis, I haven't thrown my phone. So it's great. My sponsor, she also taught me about that second part of the 12 step, you know, suiting up and showing up, not only for Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, practicing these principles in all my affairs. What kind of AA am I if I'm constantly ditching my family to go, you know, do this AA, do that AA, speak at this meeting, do this, and I'm not at home? You know, I'm not showing up for my family. You know, and she taught me about balance, about taking care of myself, and not to say that I'm not still on the firing lines. I am still there, but I'm not obsessively there. I'm not running away from my stuff at home. You know, I know I've found a way to show up, suit up for my family as well. And that experience of what I had, I got the opportunity. I was very irresponsible for a couple years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, you know, if I buy a new girl a steak, I'm going to stay sober. And so I had the opportunity. I had to move in with my family. Just because we're sober doesn't mean we do everything perfectly. And I consolidated my debt, moved in with my family just for a little bit to get straight. And it was awesome because I got to be my sponsor had taught me about what I said, you know, with suiting up and showing up, and I got to be the daughter that I never was. And when I left this last time, I just started crying. I have a really, really beautiful relationship with my parents now, and with my grandma too. And my grandma's not an easy woman. She's this little Cuban angry woman, and I can tell you that when I get off the phone with her, she's just gushing, I love you. And that's what this program has shown me how to do. You know, so I recently finally got back on my feet financially. I've had the opportunity to, my first couple years, well, my first, whatever, probably the second, third, fourth year, I was in a relationship that was so volatile that we about destroyed ourselves. And after that, I used the opportunity to, you know, what the book says, you know, if I'm unsure, you know, go help others. And it was really cool. It's amazing at those times in our lives, God puts a lot of people on our path for us to help. And it was amazing because I can tell you that not one moment, not one more moment that I couldn't handle was I lonely. I did have my points, but God put women in my path so that it was bearable. And I've gotten the opportunity to get back into that relationship. I'm not, you know, an advocate of relationships, but I am just talking about it a little bit because we both had the opportunity to grow on our own, to really learn how to live in 10, 11, and 12. And we've been back trying it for the past almost 2 years. And it's working out really well. It's different. You know, he's got his program, I've got mine. He's got his life, I've got mine. And we meet in the middle, and it doesn't take from each other. It's not an obsession. It's not anything like that. It just adds to it. And I've seen over the course of my sobriety that I don't get it, but somewhere along the way, the simple life, and those things that I never found valuable, they're creeping up on me, and I absolutely adore them. Like family, I absolutely love family. This relationship, like I never wanted to settle down, that sort of thing, and I find it absolutely amazing at the end of the day to have somebody that I can share my little, you know, aha moments with. And, you know, I don't know. I don't get this whole thing. I used to say that, you know, from the podium, I'm progressively less of a monster, but it's amazing because somehow through living in 10, 11, and 12, I'm not a monster anymore. Somehow through, you know, living this way of life, I have sponsees in my life today that call me their angel, you know, and I still feel like it's almost unwarranted, but I can't believe it. My favorite thing, like I said, going back to that, is I adore sponsoring other women. I love the fact that, like, in the first 6 months, before they're really into this, they are so annoying. I'm like, oh, my God. And as they, you know, go through these steps, I take a little longer than a month to go through the steps. I just switch now. And this is, like I said, I'm not condoning or denouncing anything. I'm just saying my experience. I started going through the book chapter by chapter with them. I find with me, it just works better when they start sponsoring others. They're better able to pass this on. So I just go through chapter by chapter. So it, you know, however long it takes, depending on their availability and mine, you know, but I love it. You know, the effect is still the same. And still when they call me, if they got a resentment or something, we're still doing a 10 step. It's not like I'm letting them sit and do nothing. You know, I still push them in the direction of God, you know, but, just going through the book and, I find it gives me more time with them and, I get to bond with them more, and I love it so much. You know, I couldn't, days like today when I'm driving up to go speak at a meeting, I'm living back in New Jersey, you know, I get to think about the fact that, you know, oh, when's the last time I spoke, how was it, you know, what, you know, just kind of a little bit in that gratitude moment of how cool this thing is. And, you know, I don't really get to see it in myself, only that I, more or less I do that reflection. It only hits me, like, every now and again where I'm driving down a road that, you know, I used to ride the bus on, you know, and thinking, you know, what is my life going to be like? And, you know, it's been hitting me in little moments lately. Like, it's just, it all ended up so beautifully, and, but still, it's hard for me to see it in myself. When I'm, you know, taking a girl through the steps, you know, I get to see it in her. You know, I get to see that, you know, she goes from this girl who's like, I don't know why, but sometimes they come in and they're just like teenagers. And I remember this one girl when I first started sponsoring her. She had like socks up to her knees and a book bag and pigtails and stuff, and like bounced, literally. Like, I remember her getting her 90 days and she like bounced up to the front, and we had the opportunity to start this start this meeting down there, and it ended up, oh my God, it was good, but it also was definitely a growing experience to start a meeting. I grew. But the cool part is, you know, and I'm not complaining, I just, you know, it was definitely a growing experience, but I got to see what it did for her. And when she first started this thing, she was like 6 months sober, and then I got to see her like really get involved in this thing, and like she's like a grown woman sometimes. I talk to her, and I'm like, I swear to God, it seems like she's older than me. You know, and I'm like so proud of her, and she's helping others, and like I love this thing so much. You know, and this other woman, like she's all grown up now, and she's like engaged, about to have a baby, and I'm like, this like is the most incredible thing in the world. You know, we come into these rooms, either we're outwardly derelicts or inwardly derelicts. You know, and we go through these steps, we don't have to believe it. And we get these beautiful, beautiful lives. And so I'm rambling now, so I'm going to shut up. But thank you so much for listening.